We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues, etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 10th of March. From one weighty subject, the collapse of the American judicial system, even as it grows stronger in and of itself, to the collapse of American evangelicalism, there's an article written by our guest in the Christian Science Monitor titled The Coming Evangelical Collapse. We'll be talking about it for about the next 20 minutes of the program. Then Dr. Gilbert Mailander will join us for hour two to kick off that hour. We'll be talking about President Obama's announcement yesterday to allow federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. Our call-in number for the next hour and a half, 1-877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Michael Spencer is a writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com, been reading it a long time, and he's written an article, The Coming Evangelical Collapse in the Christian Science Monitor. Michael, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Michael, don't you read the papers? I mean, we just had a survey come out yesterday that said that the people who call themselves non-denominational Christians went from 0.1% in 1990 to 0.35% of the population now, and this is where many people believe the future of evangelicalism actually resides, and you say evangelicalism has an imminent collapse facing it. How can you say that?
Well, first of all, let's make sure we're clear on what I'm saying. All day long, people have been telling me I'm predicting the total demise of evangelicalism, and I'm not. I am saying that within 10 to 25, we're going to see a rapid decrease in, I expect that my grandchildren will be looking at about half of the evangelicalism there is today. The phenomena you're talking about is basically, I think, the result of megachurch dominance in the evangelical world. The number of megachurches has grown astronomically, and what you have is a lot of people who have moved from no church affiliation to attending, and we got to be careful what we say about most megas because most of them don't have a membership model, to attending or identifying with a megachurch. So their numbers and the numbers of people who say, okay, well, I was not going to church as after college or after my divorce or whatever, now I'm going to such and such megachurch, those numbers are way up because the megachurch is sort of in full bloom now. But megachurches are a house of cards, and I think there will be many of them that will be the first big signs of this collapse. There'll be many left, but megachurches really are, I think, the primary example of, at least many of them, are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, why it's so insubstantial, why it's so unsatisfying. So those numbers are up, but you can also go to areas where there are dominant megachurches and say how many people are in church now as opposed to 20 years back. And even though you have megachurches, you have fewer people in church as a percentage of the population or even total. So I think there's a bit of an illusion there.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually, for America. After 30-some-odd years of church growth, a guest on the program did some research, actually wrote a book called Stealing Sheep, where he says the church itself, as a percentage of the population or as a raw number, has not grown under the church growth movement. We've just moved people from smaller churches to bigger churches. You say that evangelicals have made a big mistake in identifying themselves, in identifying their movement with a culture war and with political conservatism. Why was that a mistake?
Well, I think that over-identification, the church as a movement over-identifying with the culture war has been a tremendous drain on evangelicalism's needed focus on the gospel. Anyone who is familiar with evangelicals in the last 10 to 15 years knows that an evangelical these days is far more likely to identify himself by his stance on social and political issues rather than by anything approaching the Apostles' Creed or confessional Christianity. And that's a real concern. And no matter what that does on the political level, it has drained evangelicalism of its vital doctrinal core. And I'm 52. I've worked with students since I was 18, and I can easily see this. My students have far deeper feelings about culture war issues than they have about theological issues. On theological issues, it's moral therapeutic deism. On cultural issues, they are standing by those culture war issues. Many of them are. Now, we are seeing a lot of shifting of young adult evangelicals looking at this investment in the culture war and questioning it. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. I think really the whole political heyday of evangelicalism is, if not gone, it's certainly going to eclipse for the next few years.
So if you talk to young people, you'll find them, they know what they believe and why they believe it on social moral issues and political issues. Those are non-negotiables for them. But as far as their theology, is it negotiable?
They know that in the Bible somewhere are the reasons that they are pro-life and anti-gay marriage, but they don't have the Christian worldview framework. Very, very few do. And this is because evangelicalism has done a much better job of passing on its culture war concerns than, again, its doctrinal core. And this is why so many people, thousands of them at my blog over the 8 years I've been blogging, have come to the conclusion that evangelicalism is simply insubstantial, and they go looking for something that has both the core values and the core theology, and many of them wind up heading towards Rome or orthodoxy.
You say that evangelicalism has failed to pass on the faith once for all delivered to the saints. Why has it failed to do that? That seems to kind of be, what, job number one? If you want to, even if it's, you just view it as a movement to survive.
Well, of course, you could call Michael Horton and get a far better answer than from me on that. Michael's been writing about that for a long time. Even in someone outside the evangelical community, like Christine Wicker in her book, Follow the Evangelical Nation, says this has been our great failure. I think there are several reasons. Certainly one of the most prevailing is the interest in church growth being the primary value. And then this buys into pragmatism and innovation at all costs, and we wind up making people who are only marginally connected to our faith and are never discipled, and then the church continues to move its entire agenda towards growth, so there is less and less going on to disciple the people who actually are there. And if you do that over a period of 15-20 years, you are taking out a huge chunk of the heart of your movement's future, and that I think is what we are watching.
What do you make of leaders of confessional Reformation church bodies like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, who are doing their best to ape pop American Christianity?
Well, I'm no expert on the LCMS. I know a little more about the Reformed world, the Baptist world. I think that this was the crossroads moment for confessional churches of all types. And I mean, I think anyone who sits where I sit in evangelicalism and asks what is needed right now for millions of evangelicals, and it is a strong, missional, outreaching, confessional church tradition. Not one that's hiding or trying to copy someone else, but is staying true to its core, true to its confession, but is reaching out towards evangelicals and towards those same people that are going into the megachurches because their doors are so wide open. If we could find a way to continue being who we are as confessional Christians, but to be as welcoming and as outreaching as those who have decided to jettison that doctrinal core, I think we could see something happen. It's a very sad moment, really. It's a very sad moment to see this crossroads come, and there's just no place for so many to go.
We talk about issues, et cetera, as Radio for Recovering Evangelicals, and we hear from them all the time.
Right.
How does the church reach out to the refugees and the recovering evangelicals?
Well, I think it is a long-term commitment. I think you guys know that. You have to come to terms with the channels of communication and presentation that are out there. I think you have to have some flagship churches that know how to use media. I was listening to Mark Driscoll at Mars Hill the other day say that he realized that his church's success in reaching so many unchurched in Seattle was congruent with the rise of the Internet and the use of the Internet in ministry. I think we have to invest ourselves over time in those things that do present who we are, but then we have to deal with those issues about do we really want to let go of some of our security and risk what has to be risked in order to bring new people in, assimilate them, disciple them. And so many traditional churches with strong confessional backgrounds aren't willing to do that. They don't want that risk. And, of course, evangelicals are willing to negotiate anything. They'll turn a baptism into a backyard barbecue on a moment's notice if it'll get someone there. So that's their strong point. So it's never any surprise to me that these folks who are more than ready to deconstruct and re-innovate everything pull in so many people, because you have other traditions that just simply won't even look at the most basic issues of communication, presentation, or even ask the question, how are we perceived by others?
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, pick up right there with Michael Spencer. He's written an article for the Christian Science Monitor, The Coming Evangelical Collapse.
My friend, I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Robert Peterson, Sandra Franz, Gene Schrader, Laura Solomon, Doris Underhill, Joshua Claiborne, Jacqueline Schrader, Joe Bozant, Susan Tice, and David Hobson. Thanks for your support.
Here are a few of the features of the new Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Study notes, application notes, and prayers from a uniquely Lutheran perspective. 120 maps, charts, and diagrams. You'll find law and gospel application notes, center column references, and quotes from the Church Fathers. Check out the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with couple if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
You are my soul. Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues, Etc.
This is the end.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tuesday afternoon, March the 10th, Michael Spencer is our guest, writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com. And he's written an article for the Christian Science Monitor titled The Coming Evangelical Collapse. We'll post a link to this article at our website, issuesetc.org. Just click On Demand and you'll find that link. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number, 877-623-MYIE, or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. In connection with something you were saying before the break, you say that denominationalism is also probably facing something of a similar kind of collapse along with evangelicalism. Explain that.
Well, I think that not necessarily the doctrinal distinctiveness of our traditions, though I think that maintaining that in the current atmosphere, which is very, very, very generic, I think that is a tough job. But I think that from the standpoint of people asking questions of, you know, why are we supporting huge numbers of denominational employees and facilities, and what is this all about? I think it's an age of networking with like-minded people, but maintaining that denominational structure that so many of us grew up with. I grew up with as a Southern Baptist, and that certainly others did. And I work at one level of that. I think that there's some real concerns there that is part of the collapse that really is going to fall and fall hard.
The final reason you give, and then I want to give you a chance to explain what you think it's going to look like post-evangelicalism or kind of in the next stage of this thing. You say the final reason is the money is simply going to dry up.
Well, this is part of what I call the generational horizon problem, which is that evangelicalism has has lived off this greatest generation, the people who tithe without questioning. The older generation who gives loyally to their causes. And when that generational horizon hits and we are faced with baby boomers, and you can only imagine what they're thinking right now as we go through this financial crunch, and a much more skeptical, pragmatic Generation Y and so on, who are only going to support what they see really involves them and gives them some benefit. I think the money is going to drive. I think there's been enormous coasting on the generosity of the greatest generation, and a lot of denominational ministries, a lot of ministries in general, that are not doing the hard work to sell themselves as good stewardship to younger givers are going to crash.
What can we expect evangelicalism to look like, 25 years from now?
Well, the Christian Science Monitor article was a distillation of three longer articles that are at internetmonk.com right now. And the three longer articles, I have a lot of detail on that, especially in the third one. And I'm certainly no prophet, but here are some of the things I think we are going to see. What will remain in evangelicalism will continue to be dominated by megachurches for, I think, another chapter. Because there is a great diversity among megachurches in terms of what they are doing, how devoted they are to the gospel, how much church planting they are doing, how much compromise with the culture. There's big differences, and that's going to somewhat sort out. I think we're going to see Pentecostal Christianity have an ascendancy because they have a lot of energy. They have a lot of cross-cultural savvy. They have a lot of the kind of spirituality that appeals to America right now. They are tied into the world Christian movement, and we are a nation of increasing immigrants. They have big problems, doctrinally, biblical authority, and prosperity gospel. That's probably going to get them in their next chapter. But 25 years from now, I think they will be the majority report in a very diverse evangelicalism. And then I think the confessional churches, the ones that have worked hard for reformation and theological renewal, I think they're going to be doing well. They're not going to be doing what they would hope and pray for. I think they're going to continue to be small, but I think they're going to be vital. And my word to them is start new churches. My prayer is that the evangelicalism of the future is full of new congregations. I don't want to make anybody angry because I love older people, and I almost am one. But our future is in new churches, and we have spent a lot of time trying to revitalize what didn't want to be revitalized. And I think church planters and church planting is much more what we need to be thinking about for our future.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to be kind of a big castle on the hill with little villages below. You're going to have Joel Osteen hitting 70,000
right.
a week. As he grows gray, so will his audience, and that'll be A-OK, as long as his message remains as vacuous as ever. As long as he steers clear of his word faith roots, he gets bigger. And then the other vital center, I don't know if that would be called a vital center there, because there's so little gospel, but the vital center of the church sounds like it's going to be congregations that may be less than 25 years old, but in fact, a theology that is as ancient as the scriptures themselves.
I think that this is an era of church planting. If we knew, as Chuck Colson said, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, we were facing a new dark age, what would we do? Well, I mean, there are some things you do in terms of retreating. But the thing that we as Reformation Christians need to do is to admit our weakness as church planters and to address that and to send people into our culture to plant our future churches, making the changes we know need to be made based on the experience we are having now. I'm a very optimistic person about the future of Christianity. But evangelicalism as a post-Billy Graham phenomena, I think we are going to see that collapse happen. But what I hope is going to be birthed out of that will be something very diverse with lots of new churches. One thing I want to add into that picture is I think a lot of evangelicals are going to go to Rome and go to the Eastern Orthodox route. My phone and my email has rung up all day with Catholics saying, Mr. Spencer, would you become a Catholic? And this has been going on as long as I've been doing Internet Muck. Rarely has a Lutheran ever said that to me. Rarely has a Presbyterian ever said that to me. But Catholics are relentless wanting evangelicals to move over. And the reason for that is so many have, and that they are saying this is a directly address the problems we had with evangelicalism. And that, I think, is going to be a fact of the future.
With only about a minute here, Pope Benedict, one of the first things he said after being elevated was that the Roman Catholic Church will probably need to decrease in size and increase in its faithfulness. I think he was absolutely right. If so, how come we don't see any church leaders in the Protestant Church making statements like this?
Well, because church growth is the idol we have set up and said you can do no wrong if you're worshiping that idol. And I put up a piece on InternetMuck.com a few days ago about an evangelistic meeting a fellow was at, and the evangelist had people texting in their decisions for Christ. That sort of innovative use of technology is all about numbers at all cost. That's our problem.
Michael Spencer is a writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com. I suggest you read it. He's also written an article for the Christian Science Monitor titled The Coming Evangelical Collapse. You can check out the article under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Michael, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Todd.
You know, I think when Pope Benedict uttered those words, I thought to myself, now there is brave church leadership. A man who is willing to tell his church, and he speaks for 1.5 billion Christians in the world, and he speaks to them too. Benedict says, well, in the 21st century, the Roman church will likely get smaller if it is to remain faithful. Which are we called to do, get bigger or remain faithful? If you read the words of Christ, the one who began this enterprise called the church and sustains this enterprise called the church, he calls always and only for faithfulness. He says it is of primary importance for stewards that they be found faithful. He says nothing about success. He says nothing about expediency. He says nothing about being effective or efficient. He says nothing about getting bigger. He says faithfulness. What are the words that will greet each and every Christian, pastor, lay person, lifelong Christian, deathbed convert, on their entrance into eternal life. Good and faithful servant. Now, sometimes in the history of the church, faithfulness, job one in the church, has meant numerical growth. And over time, I think you could say that it always has meant numerical growth on the long term, kind of like the stock market. But at times, faithfulness to Christ and His Word has meant that the church gets smaller or stays the same. What does Christ call for? Trust me, believe me, proclaim my death, my resurrection, my blood shed for sinners. Remain faithful unto death. That's what He calls for. That's His call to the church now and in the future. When we come back, hour two of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.